Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 289 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On tonight's episode, we'll be doing the box office ace for The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, The Night Before, and The Secret in Their Eyes. Got a lot of news to discuss on today's show. Also reviews for Steve Jobs, Spotlight, Terminator Genesis, Entourage, The Final Girl, and Trevor's thoughts on Inside Out, as well as trailers for the new Divergent film, IP Man 3. We got Triple Nine and My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. But first, let's jump into that box office ace game.
Not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Okay.
And play it well, I think. I think I did okay last week. And I think you went high on 33, didn't you? I went 5.7.
I have no idea what's going on anymore.
And and you, I believe, went around 9 or 10, didn't you?
I probably went a million. 300 million. I was at 7.5.
I believe I went 6 on the Coopers, and that did 8.4. I went a little. And what did you go on that? I think you went 11 on that.
I was at 7.5.
Oh, okay. Well, you stumped yourself on both. So, but these are bombs once again. And or Love the Coopers isn't an outright bomb. It just it might have legs here in the next week or so, but we'll see. Let's move on and talk about this week's offerings, because there's much more enticing things happening. We got The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, basically the final Hunger Games movie, unless they do it.
Basically, sequel. Yeah.
But in this incarnation, in this version, the last Hunger Games film. So
it's basically
eagerly anticipated. This is on the the premium large formats and the IMAX, which wasn't the case the last go around. Although this isn't in 3D. Where do you think this opens up? I believe the bar is at 120. Is that right?
I'm going to say 130, because I don't know. This is hard to judge at this point with what the part one did. But I don't know. Does this come out and beat all of them?
It's a tricky thing, right? That's my problem.
It's got to be 150, though. I don't know. I don't know.
Does this go the Harry Potter route? The Harry Potter route, and become the highest grossing weekend in the last one, that is, or does this go like the Avengers and have fall off with the subsequent returns?
Well, regardless, whatever it does, I think we can both agree, it's 120 or over, right?
Correct. I was initially going to say 128, but since you're sitting on the 130, I think I'm going to go a little higher and go 137, just because I think there is a lot of interest in this. The last one turned off a lot of people from what I hear. I still haven't caught up with these, but
yeah, the last one was a lot of filler, but this one will be very good and very exciting. This is all the cool stuff in this one. That's why it's hard to say, because, with the way that they break these movies up now, you can't really turn people off anymore, can you? They almost expect to have that filler movie.
Yeah, it's almost a rite of passage for a franchise lover nowadays.
Like, we're going to squeeze out an extra billion here. You guys are just going to pay.
And
but the next one will be really good.
This one's for the studio, okay?
Exactly.
All right. We got The Night Before, Seth Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Anthony Mackie, Christmas film, stoner Christmas film, if you will, it looks like.
Sure.
I don't know where the bar is at on this one. I'm having 20. A hard time with this one. Where is it?
20.
20? That's fair. That's fair. I'm hearing projections that are very low for this. I'm hearing things that are very high. So, shit.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm going to go first. I'm going to go 14 on this.
Wow, that's low.
I know.
I'm at 22 right now, but
which is exactly where I was going to go. So
yeah, well, I these are all subject to change Thursday night.
Just a little disclaimer, huh?
Exactly.
And lastly, we have The Secret in Their Eyes, which I think will open up Leith at
I don't
all of
even...
these. This is along the lines of The Brave One and Eye for an Eye, the old Sally Field movie. This is a vigilante type movie, a female vigilante movie. These usually don't do well at the box office. They have a somewhat small following, and they do solid, not well.
This is Big Mouth. What's her name?
Julia Roberts.
Roberts, God.
Big Mouth. She got a nice smile. Show us them teeth, girl.
She has an enormous smile.
She makes you smile when you see it.
Yeah, I mean, this would have been, I think, a little bit on everyone's radar if she had been, you know, revising, or if this had been like the sequel to Pretty Woman or something, right?
Well, if this had been in the 90s.
Why don't they do that?
This would have been huge.
Just a silly, like, Pretty Woman 2, but it's like, you know, she blows shit up.
However, this is only going to open up, I think, with about 11 saying. Million.
Yeah, I'm at 12. But, it, you know, Pretty Woman 2, she kills people. $40 million opening, easy. I'm telling you.
Pretty Woman 2 was a movie called Whore with Teresa Russell, 1990. Look it up. Honestly, that's like the real version of Pretty Woman.
Didn't they make a couple of those, too?
Yeah, I think there's a Whore 2, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
We're not joking. There really is a movie called Whore from 1990 with Teresa Russell, and it's literally like the dark side of Pretty Woman. All the what would have really happened if that man picked her up for a week. Whore 2, I can't speak for. Never saw one. I was busy watching Wild Orchid on Squiggly Line Cinemax.
God.
We'll go to Box Office Ace and play along.
Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy 2 is the good one. That was the list of Milano one. Come on, it's like crazy. The Drew Barrymore
it wasn't yeah, but then there was a third one, too. There's a Jamie Presley one, too.
Well, we can't forget. I mean, yeah. That's the new seduction. That's Poison Ivy, the new seduction.
He goes, like, yeah. And then he knows the tagline. Yeah. He knows the colon.
Believe me, with Jamie Presley, I know the colon. Moving on. Let's talk about some things that are happening right now. We got a diehard superfan. You hear about this? This diehard fan.
What is he a diehard fan of?
He was a diehard superfan of the first film. This guy, Eric Whitman, who took out a full-page ad in The Hollywood Reporter with pitching his idea to the producers and Bruce Willis specifically for his prequel idea for the new installment
just
coming up.
Just putting it out there.
And actually, I read the thing. You read the thing. I thought that the pitch was decent.
Yeah, it was good. I would watch it. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a Die Hard movie.
And it follows along the lines of what they're going to do now with this Die Hard Year One, as it's being known. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a bad colon right there. And this guy has McClane in prison for beating up a sex trafficker, and the younger version of him on the streets, kind of a la Gotham, you know, with what they're doing with the Commissioner Gordon character. And for what it sounded like, it seemed pretty reasonable. You know, McClane trying to stop a prison riot. You know, you got the countdown element or the clock counting down type element, which is the Die Hard, the best things about the Die Hard movies. And then the younger investigative stuff. So I thought it was a pretty well thought out little pitch. You can read it in its entirety on The Hollywood Reporter. And today Bruce Willis was made aware of it as he's doing press for his Misery theater stage play. And he, you know, he said that's an interesting idea, and then kind of laughed it off. He said, but that's very, very far away, because of course he's in serious actor mode. He's on the stage, right?
He's always in serious actor mode. What are you talking about?
He's in serious prick mode, right? I mean, is there any more of an actor that's like known to be a prick besides Chevy Chase? I mean, honestly,
Charlie Sheen?
I mean, we're gonna even get into the Charlie Sheen tonight with all the shit going on with him right now in the media. I mean, let's stay away from that blood, brother, all right? Let's talk about bad tiger's blood. So getting back to this, we have Bruce Willis that has said this now. So he did catch the ear of the star, which is more than he said he thought he would ever get. This guy included his phone number and email address if you want to contact him with your thoughts on his pitch.
Oh, I'm going to be calling him. I'm going to get a Bruce Willis impersonator to call him.
Should we get him on the podcast? Yeah. Call him with a soundboard?
Yeah. People have done stuff like this before, though, right?
Yeah, but you haven't seen it in a while.
It's obviously not the first guy. That's like, well, I mean, it's pointless, right? There's no way they're gonna pick up his way. This is one surefire way to not get your movie made, is to do this.
I think it was more to get some attention that he's an independent film producer, because he does have a company. And
yeah, right. Right.
Things going on there.
I think so as well, and you know, just gets his name out there.
Well, having your name out there has not hurt the cast of the Fast and Furious, because they are all out there, especially Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is prolific these days, and Vin Diesel, who's having a rough run of it. And it's not surprising to hear Vin Diesel say that the Universal executives behind Neil Moritz, specifically the producer, and Vin Diesel himself, are going to spin the series off with secondary characters going off in their own adventures. Of course, to me, that sounds like Hobbs, Dwayne Johnson's character. That would be the most with a fugitive type storyline. Because really, who else could you have?
There's nobody else.
That could be the only person that I could see doing something here in that vein.
Unless Vin Diesel is just shedding everyone else.
F. Gary Gray has been just going to be him to direct this new one, and they're said to be scaling back the bigger than life stunts and over the top aspects, and trying to get to a character driven installment, darker, more smaller version from what I'm hearing. But yeah,
sure.
Cars don't fly. You know what I mean?
Sure. Cars don't. You mean people don't fly?
I'd like to see Tyrese's character get his own spin-off, but then again, he's only really great in small
doses. I like
doses.
Tyrese in those, but yeah, I mean, his character doesn't really deserve its own storyline, even. What the hell?
Well, it's the concept of the shared universe, of course, this whole new idea that has
But it doesn't belong. These aren't superheroes. This isn't...
of course they're superheroes. I mean, go back to part six when people are jumping off tanks and hitting...
Yeah, I know. You can write it however you want, but these aren't superheroes. These are just people, right? And it's just... This isn't comic books. This isn't a universe that I certainly don't give a shit about. I can imagine anyone else really cares. You know, I don't think people go see these movies to really get into the universe.
This last one sold a lot of tickets and a lot of DVDs worldwide and Blu-rays, but I'm telling you, it's I don't know anyone that loves it.
It's going to be a fall if they don't do something good this next time.
Yeah, they got to change up the formula a little bit.
It's easily going to be a stumble.
I'll tell you what, the Fast and Furious franchise right now needs its Casino Royale. It needs that one to go any further than this, because they're now at the point of buffoonery. So.
I don't know how they do it, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. All right, here's a little bit of news that leaked out this week. I had no idea that Kevin Smith, who was very sought after in the 90s for script writing, he penned a version of Superman Lives, a couple other things like that, that never got made, a Fletch sequel that was proposed as well. It came out that he did a draft for Coyote Ugly, and it was much raunchier than sans... The emotional love story that was in
the
movie.
He says that, and it's part of one of the Evening Kevin Smith stories.
I did not know this. First of all, those Evening with Kevin Smith, if you haven't seen those, check out any incarnation.
It's in the
of
first one, I think he mentions it.
You remember all these? They're saying now that Jessica Simpson came very close to being cast in that, which I think would have been fucking phenomenal casting. I didn't recall any sort of memory of him having to do with this project.
Oh, yeah, he talked about it before. He says that. When he went to go see the movie, none of his dialogue was in the movie, but some of his direction was in there, like settings and stuff. He said that they kept weird stuff that you would think that they would have kept the Kevin Smith dialogue, what he's famous for, but they kept odd things like character names, like settings and stuff like that.
Well, it just goes to show you how many cooks are in the kitchen on a movie like that too, and how many things that get added and taken away and rewrites. I mean, if you've seen a shooting script, I mean, they have different color pages for different rewrites, and it's sometimes just like a fucking rainbow. You know, they run out of colors at some point.
Unless it's a Clint Eastwood movie.
Right, and then they just shoot it with crayons. It's like if you have like a handwritten on a yellow legal pad.
This is on the napkin. All right, perfect. Is this the first draft?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Paul Haggis just turned in his laptop at one point, and Eastwood just looked at it. Oh, yeah, we got it here. They even got to print it. Fun. which has worked to his detriment too sometimes. That one with Matt Damon was terrible. Where he was the psychic and there was the big tsunami. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was fucking horrendous. Nobody remembers it.
That was a Clint Eastwood movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't remember that being a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Hmm.
Okay, here's a little bit of casting news. Some news I actually like coming out of the casting world. They're doing this Richard Pryor biopic, which they should have done a long time ago because Eddie Murphy would have killed it. But he basically did that in Dreamgirls in a weird version. But anyways, this Richard Pryor biopic they're going to do, and he is not going to be it, but Mike Epps is going to play the lead role, which has been known for a while, and Lee Daniels is directing. But they cast for the Thank Red God. Fox role Tracy Morgan. I love that casting.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That sounds like a great casting decision right there, because Tracy Morgan is one of those guys that can do that sentimental. I mean, when he plays it fake sentimental, it even works. You know what I mean? Like when he's doing it on 30 Rock, he's kind of like being fact sentimental. And this, I could see him just killing something like that. And right now with his great – he had a great performance on Saturday Night Live. He's making a comeback of sorts, and I think we're ready for some Tracy Morgan, I think. You know, I miss the guy. I really always liked him. It's a shame what happened to him with the car accident and everything and being taken out of circulation for so long.
Yeah, I don't know what he's missing from necessarily, because he was kind of done with everything at that point, wasn't he?
Well, I just feel like in his wake, we have Kevin Hart who's risen and kind of taken the mantle of the funny.
Well, that started long before the car accident. He kind of, I don't know, Tracy Morgan never really feels like has been given a big enough shot at this point. He's kind of been, you know, just all those SNL guys kind of never really, they just never emerged fully, did they? Is there one of them that's done it?
Well, of course. I mean, you got really? Sandler, Farrell. I mean, all those guys. I mean, come on. It's Murray. You can go back a long list of guys.
Yeah, Bill Murray, maybe.
Mike
Myers. I
don't
know. I mean, who? Dan Aykroyd? I mean, give me a break. Like, Dan Aykroyd's not shit.
Sandler's fucking huge.
Sandler's big. I mean, I'll give you that one. But
Chris Farley, we talked
people
about.
People love to hate
Sandler.
Yeah, Chris Farley died. He didn't quite make it. That's what I mean. A lot of people didn't quite make it. I mean, Mike Myers
had
his moment, but Mike Myers is nowhere to be found. Chris Rock's basically gone. Right, they never really. They just. I don't know.
Eddie Murphy, I guess
Sandler would be the one.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy did. He made it for a while there. But they've all. Why do they fall? Why do they go away?
I think it's hard to be the funniest man in the world forever. I think
it's
that's
hard to
the
stay
title.
There.
It's almost like being heavyweight champ, you know, or some sort of champion, any sort of fighting. I think you have to. It's
well,
hard.
Well, Sandler,
to have that pressure
people
on.
Love to hate, so he's kind of.
Yeah,
screwed.
For,
either way
no
goes.
Reason. You know, I caught.
I agree. No reason.
I gotta give him props on something. I never noticed. I was watching something the other day, and it had DVR'd the last few minutes of the previous thing on television. And it was the end of
sure. –
I believe it was the end of 50 First Dates. Mm-hmm. And there's a title card that comes up very briefly, and I pause it to read it. And apparently Stanley Sandler, his father, had passed away during production. And it's this beautiful paragraph written to his father that is very – honestly, no one will ever see it. And – I just thought, like, that's a nice thing to just kind of throw in at the end of one of these kind of moronic comedies that gets very dismissed. And I'm sure you think back to that. And Sandler – clearly Sandler knows that's in there. He wrote the damn thing. I just – I don't know. I read it, and it kind of – it got me emotional. It struck me at the right time. I think I'm pregnant.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with pregnant. Adam Sandler's baby.
Yeah, right? No, I had to give him credit on that. Credit where it's due. It nice
yeah,
it's
nice. Those things are nice when people put little – poignant like odes to people. I don't know, what do you call that?
It is kind of, it's like a eulogy in a weird way.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Immortalizes them. I just never had really ever paid attention to that movie past.
No, I didn't know that was in there either.
Yeah, and if a DVR, you know. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back in reverse order. We got some trivia and then reviews.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Okay.
All right. Got a little trip.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. To name
Eisenhower.
Name that movie, okay?
Eisenhower.
I believe in Ike.
It's always Eisenhower.
Anyone
out there playing Trivial Pursuit, it's always Eisenhower.
I played Cards Against Humanity the other day. You played that yet?
No. What is it?
Cards Against Humanity?
With a D.
Cards. Yeah. C-A-R-D-S.
Yeah, Cards. No.
Against Humanity? No.
What is it?
It's a card game where your innermost asshole comes out. It must have been a college drinking game that some sort of frat monetized.
You play with playing cards then.
Yeah, and it's a.
Yeah,
it's not
like Magic.
It, but Google
it. I thought you were playing Magic the Gathering over there. So.
No, but I am up for a little D&D action if you're ready.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what she said. Okay, trivia. Name the movie. It's not Eisenhower.
Rocky.
Universal Pictures was absolutely horrified of bootleggers. Mm-hmm. When this movie came out on VHS, it was a green cassette. Now, that's not absolutely true. the top part of the cassette. Now, if you remember what how videotapes had
pushed
a little button and the top part flipped back and you can actually see the tape, that part was green. The actual cassette wasn't all green, but this was the combat bootleg versions of this Universal Pictures smash. You owned this, I'm sure. I owned this as a kid. Everybody had this movie in their collection.
Was it E.T.?
It was E.T.
That's what I thought. It had that green, and it was it was the protection for the tape. It protected
the dust cover, basically.
The tape. Yeah.
The trivia question isn't absolutely true. It's not really a green cassette, but yeah, that was done. The green I always thought was.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I own that. Yeah.
Wasn't that for like the aliens? You know, I always thought like the E.T. was a UFO, a green man, a little fucking green top.
I don't know.
I'm
sure it stopped a lot of people from buying bootlegs, though. I'll tell you. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, bootlegging, right? And that cassette, it's hard to find sales figures for, like, old things like that, you know?
In the 80s.
Even in the
90s,
it's spotty. They say Lion King and Home Alone are huge DVD, or I'm sorry, VHS sellers, which you know from having VHS collection and being around people. But E.T., they said, sold 28 million cassettes. That is a shitload of cassettes. I got to believe movie. That Phantom Menace sold something close to that, because any old secondhand store has walls full of those on VHS.
I did not own Phantom Menace.
On VHS, no?
No. Why the fuck would I want to watch? How many times did I watch that movie?
I don't know. I saw that twice in the theater. Hell, I saw it in the 3D re-release, for Christ's sakes. I've seen it three times in the theater.
That's rough.
Yeah, it never got better. I don't know. They just expect it to change anytime I see it. It doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, he's good. That's why I don't watch like Attack of the Clones. I go, that's why I don't watch that one.
Yeah, just the third one.
Just the third one. Even that one's spotty. I tried to watch the third one the other day. I got an hour into it, and I was like, oh, this isn't as good as I remember it being at all. But maybe it's because the other two are so
because you
got to
watch the other two. You got to watch them in a row.
Yeah, honestly. I put on the third one. I hadn't seen it in 10 years. I hadn't seen it at the theater because I didn't want to, like, ruin it for myself and have this happen. Rewatching it and going, oh, this is
shit. Well, they are just bad, yeah. I mean, especially compared to 4 through 6, you know. Those first three are just like, whoa, bad. So hopefully... we get something better.
Yeah, we don't know yet, so.
Yeah, it's probably better than those. I think that's a safe bet, at least.
Let's go into some reviews here. We got a lot of new reviews for the show, but there's a couple that you saw recently that I want to talk about because I'm interested in what you think here. The Entourage movie.
Entourage.
I really gave this one a good review. I dug it, especially where they left off with the characters and where I thought they were going to go with the sequel. What'd you think of this movie?
It's good. You know, it's, I liked
not great.
Seeing, oh, fuck no. Are you kidding me? This has all the same problems of any
show.
Later season. Yeah. I mean, this really is a season of the show crammed into one thing. My biggest problem is, you know, where's them shooting the movie? Cause that's really what I wanted to see at this point. And where's the fucking movie? You know, they really cheap out on this in the sense that they just write in good things. You know, this follows that very simplistic Entourage format of shit on all the characters and then everything works out in the end. And it you know, while you're watching it, it's good. But when I think back on it, it's like, how many times can Eric go through that kind of shit where I feel inadequate. Oh, wait, no, I can do it. I don't know. It's silly at this point, isn't it? It's just too, you know, Doug Ellen needs to grow some fucking balls and write something for these people to do. Other than just break them up and get them back together with the girls.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's an entire season, you know?
And I would say that there's a lot of things that were just in this movie that were not paid off at all. The Armie Hammer
kind of beef like that.
For whatever reason. But at the same time...
But that's how the show is, though, because they have those cameos like that. And that's what I mean. Like, this is kind of more of like an entire season of the show rather than a movie. Doesn't it feel like that?
Yes, but there are little – yeah, I would agree with you on that. But I thought as a story that how this ended, it ended on such a note. Let's talk about spoilers here. If you haven't seen the movie, might want to fast forward here a few minutes.
But it was too
easy.
Don't you think that ending was awfully easy and awfully quick?
It was too quick. The Golden Glimpse was too quick, but I loved that they went out with Johnny on that because that's kind of a running joke throughout the whole movie that, you know, maybe you'll get a nomination that, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would love then to see a sequel, which they're never going to do now because it didn't do for shit at the box office. But I would love to see Johnny then with the, you know, now is the star and maybe Vince's career falling back. And, you know, I would love to have seen what they did with that. You know,
they wouldn't have done anything with that because it would have started up the next thing and Johnny would be on the bottom again.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair
While
enough.
While you were away, we reset the show again, you know, and that's their biggest issue.
Which I did in the very first season.
I really hated it that they took Ari and had him quit. Like, that was fucking stupid. Why can't we move forward ever on this show? It just angers me because I like these characters so much. It's great hanging out with them.
What did you like about it?
And it's like, well, that's what I mean. The characters were funny. You know, the situations were great. Unfortunately, the trailer is literally the movie. Isn't that kind of a letdown, wasn't it? I was like, damn, you know, I've seen this already. But all that stuff I really liked. I just don't like the format, the reset format that they do. I can't stand it.
That's entourage for you. That's the problems they ran into.
It's unfortunate.
Post-season three.
But the scenarios are funny. The characters are funny. I think the dialogue's really funny. I like hanging out with these guys.
Yeah, I like
So it works on that level, you know.
That's what it comes down to. You want to hang out with them again for an hour and a half? I enjoyed it. Sounds like you did too. On the same level. I'd give this 3 out of 4 stars.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't even try a star rating on it.
Well, all right, a recommendation? Would you recommend it or no?
Yeah, I would. If you like the show, obviously, but that would Absolutely. Be the only people who would want to watch it anyway. So,
well, I love when Johnny even throws the thing about like the calves in there, you know, because little things like that throughout the movie.
Yeah.
All right, another one you caught up with, one that I think is possibly going to be on my worst of the year list, Terminator Genesis. Oh, wow. What'd you think?
Oh, I didn't think it was as bad as you said. It certainly isn't good. But it wasn't. It's not the worst of the year. It was okay. Some of the action sequences I really dug. Some of the action sequences I really fucking hated.
Right.
And like the bus action sequence is pretty cool on the bridge. I'm like, oh, this is totally Terminator. This is totally fucking awesome. And then the next action sequence is the helicopter chase, and you're like, Terrible. This is fucking stupid.
Terrible.
Yeah. So that was that whole movie for me. It was kind of like, oh wow, this is cool.
When I found out that's stupid. The whole idea of the movie, yeah. I got so disappointed.
Why doesn't it just release itself?
Why does it need like, the countdown? There's a
why
plot
is it at the wait? Yeah. They're like, oh, we're going to do this. You're just like, oh, okay, well, we're not even trying at this point. Much like the Entourage movie, right? We're just writing shit to happen at this point.
I was it's with like, that movie for the first 20 minutes or so with the weird timelines, even when the old Arnold shot the new
It was kind of cool.
In what they were doing there. But once Jai Courtney and this weak chick playing Amelia Clark playing the Linda Hamilton role in some weird quasi universe in the fucking, you know, basically using the Star Trek version of jumping around in time so you could do these things in this universe without spoiling things. I just got so uninterested. And then the operating system in Miles Dyson's son.
The John Connor thing was.
The John Connor's the bad guy now?
Really stupid. Yeah, the whole ending in the middle part of this, I mean, I'm going to agree with you. I really thought
I found it boring and just repetitive. And
Amelia
just really
Clark I actually thought was pretty decent, but they didn't write anything. It, really, the whole writing on this just fell so flat that they didn't, you know, they just expected the franchise or this property really to prop itself up, just to be its own thing because it's the Terminator and you have Arnold back. It's going to be good.
It was way too
talky. Felt like they didn't
try
it.
Way too talky for
Way
action,
too talky. Actually. Yeah, I know. It felt... This is what it, you know. The problem with this is they thought it was the Avengers.
We're in a shared universe, aren't we? We're franchise building.
But it really tried to be big. It really tried to be kind of funny and stuff. And it's like that's not, you know, the other Terminator movies are serious, and then they have the shit that happens that's serious in it is funny. They're not like try to be funny. You know what I mean? Like.
We were pushing the line in part three with the talk to the hand stuff. This has moments that are intended to be amusing. It's not going to work.
The third one I like because it knows it's a piece of shit. I still
feel
like.
As well, but it's a good B-movie entertainment.
Yeah,
it's a nice
I feel like this one I felt like didn't know that. I felt like it was like, oh, this is going to be a big budget brouhaha and everyone's going to love it. And it's just like,
I honestly
totally missed the point.
Put this one down there with Salvation as forgettable pieces to the I still think there's only 3 Terminators.
I think this is better than Salvation. It's an okay movie to watch, but yeah, it was a letdown as far as yeah, and I agree with you. This isn't canon. It just doesn't belong in the franchise.
All right. Well, you saw Inside Out as well, which I got to say is probably going to make it to one of my top of the year list. I really loved this movie. I thought it was beautiful and well done and really well thought out. What'd you think of this?
Yeah, it was really good. It was Pixar doing its thing. You know, they really have this down.
This is wheelhouse Pixar
to a T.
Yeah,
yeah. At this point, my problem with it is it's a bit too imagination-ish. you know, and it kind of calls itself out on that. And I realize that it's just all made up.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's just the people inside, these little characters inside someone's brain doing shit. And then they go and they meet the imaginary friend and the things disappear and it doesn't fucking have an effect on anything. And they just do shit and just, it's like whatever the fuck ever. But it's done in such a way they know how to pull on the heartstrings. They know how to, you know, play the moments and stuff that it works as long as you don't think too hard about it.
I thought when she lost. Her, she forgot about her imaginary friend again. I thought that was, I mean, honestly, that was sad to me. That really worked for me. And I thought Lewis
forgot about
as
she never even
was great.
She never even forgot about her imaginary friend. They didn't even show the fucking them together in any way whatsoever. The imaginary friend just disappeared. It let the, you mean the scene where it gets out of the, whatever the hell its name
was. The elephant creature?
Yeah, where it gets out of the fucking wagon unless it's the fairy thing, Hope or whatever, fly up there. Nothing had anything to do with the little girl or with the parents really or any of that. You know, they, I don't know, they essentially took away her emotions, but she had emotions. She had the three that were there. I didn't quite understand. I don't think it really worked all that well.
The voice cast was great too. I thought they all not nailed
as with every single Pixar movie. So I'm, yeah. You know, I don't know. How can you continue to praise people who have just plugged in something into this? I know it worked. That's fine. But this just felt a bit like an autopilot to me a little bit.
I laughed.
Formulaic as fuck.
I thought Lewis Black was great. I laughed a couple
times.
It's
funny a little bit. Lewis Black's not in it very much.
Yeah, but when he is, he's fucking killing it. All right, what else we got here? We got what did I see? I saw Steve Jobs, and
he's
I'm glad
dead. Where'd you see him at?
I saw him
at the mall. Was he with Elvis?
No, it was Steve Carroll. I got confused.
Oh,
and
that happens.
Couldn't tell initially if I liked this movie or not. It's a hard movie to watch. Talk about talking. This is your problem with Aaron Sorkin's screenplays. I think you might hate this fucking movie. This is a stage movie. This is a stage play that's filmed. There's three scenes in this movie. Each scene is about 40 minutes long, so there's three acts, and it takes place before the launch in 84 of the personal computer, in 88 of the Next Cube, and in 98 of the iMac. And it's very play structured. All the major characters come in and have a major scene with Jobs as he before he does these launches. And it becomes, by the third act, he even jokes.
There must be
some
flashbacks, though, right?
I think three. There's
really because in the trailer there's like other shit that happens.
No, he's not walking. Really? It's a lot of staging. He walks around the event hall and things like that, and it's nicely staged, shot three different ways, 16mm, 35, and digital for the different eras. And Fassbender it does a great job with the. Well, it's a little bit gritty, and then everything has a look to it.
Yeah,
and Danny Boyle directs it as well as he can. But this is a fucking play. I mean, you have a 190-page script condensed into a 2-hour and 5-minute movie, and characters are talking, and it's very heavy. I think you might like this, or people that are technologically minded and into this will like it a lot more because of the factual stuff that's going on and the kind of glimpse inside. It reminded me of Halt and Catch Fire in its best moments, but at the same time, it's very operatic in its structuring, and it's kind of – you're not going to learn anything more than you've already know here. And the thing comes down is like same thing as the Steve Jobs movie that Ashton Kutcher did is that like the guy's just an ass. He's a brilliant asshole. So what's the takeaway here? You know, I watched that movie and I didn't gain anything from watching it. I just thought, okay, you know, not why do I give a shit, but like why – what's the hubbub here? Everyone's calling this guy a genius, and I'm not really sure why.
Well, everyone says that's apparently except for Steve Wozniak. Everyone says that that's not a very good depiction of what he was really like. So,
and what's strange is that Wozniak doesn't particularly come off well in that movie. So I don't know why he's defending it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I mean, Sorkin himself has said that this is a work of fiction, and Danny Boyle said the same thing. So I don't really know the allure of this. And from what you're telling me, it sounds like Sorkin got away with something here.
it's interesting because you could see why actors – well, first of all, Christian Bale is what I kept thinking of because Fassbender almost looks like Bale sometimes in this movie. And Bale was up for this role and walked away, as was DiCaprio. But you can see why
– which would have been bad.
You can see, though, why they moved away from it. Because to get this thing off, it's too much. It's too fucking dense. And the acting is spectacular. I'm telling you, Jeff Daniels kills it. He's really good with this Zorkin dialogue because he's done The Newsroom and other Zorkin movies. And Fassbender's great. And Winslet's great. And these characters that are in it are really nice. And the setups are paid off well later. But it is so condensed dense and condensed into this room and with what is being said that it takes a lot of energy to follow it. And you just don't really care by the movie's end. It's all for naught. It's kind of what I'm saying.
Unfortunate. I'll wind up seeing it. But
I respect it, but I didn't love it.
It's unfortunate that I parked Silicon Valley. I feel like a broken record. But it's like, how can that be the best movie about this shit? But it just is.
Maybe because it wasn't going for the prestige, you know?
It didn't try very hard. Yeah, it just told the story of some crazy misfits and shit. And, you know, Bill Gates being a retard and Steve Jobs being a moron.
Well, right? I gotta admit, though,
that it doesn't really hold them in any regard in what this film sounds like.
It's kind of on a pedestal. Yeah, it doesn't
God. Exactly.
It's not mythological. It's not myth building like this is. And this isn't like the Facebook movie, you know, the Social Network that we said in the marketing campaign. And it just goes to show you.
Yeah, but how much of that is Fincher?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. How much artistry and all of that goes with the Zorkin, figuring out that Zorkin dialogue and the rhythms. Because the rhythm in this movie is so one pace that after 2 hours and 10 minutes of it, it's tiring. It's like watching a play without an intermission. There's a reason they have act breaks in plays, because of that rapid fire dialogue and keeping up with what's going on.
Well, I just think about the opening of the Social Network and that whole walk across campus.
Yeah,
they do. But then also the bar scene, is Sorkin dialogue that, you know, important? Because they do it in such a way that you can't even hear that dialogue very well. So that's kind of, you know, Fincher being a little bit probably better of a filmmaker than Boyle.
Or at least knowing that that material had more cinematic value in opening up that world.
Yes, exactly.
Because this world is very closed. It's a nice idea. Narratively in a writing trick, maybe the screenplay gets nominated because there is a lot of good writing in here because Sorkin can fucking write, let's be honest, but it's a stage play. This is a stage play they filmed and didn't really open it up. All right, another movie I saw this last week was Spotlight, which is getting a lot of awards attention.
I thought you were going to say Jim. Jim and the Holograms.
It's already gone though.
It's gone. I can't see it. Yeah. That's how good it is.
I want to get a double bill with that and Rock the Casbah.
If they put it out there, they yank it. It creates a need. It creates a want.
Next week, I was going to go see Our Brand is Crisis and Burnt, but those probably gone too. So Spotlight. Have you heard about this one, though? The Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams film?
Yes. Was it any good?
Yes. It was very, very good. The problem is it's not great. And all these reviews for it are saying that it's this, that, and the other.
Just watch it at home.
No, it's a great procedural. First of all, I'm a sucker for movies about newspapers. I love the whole newspaper world and the reporter getting
Investigative reporter, right?
Right. I mean, that's exactly.
Right.
All the President's Men is probably the most famous one like this. It's kind of procedural, if you will. But there's been a lot that have been out there that are very good. And this one is very, very good. It's directed by Todd McCarthy, who did The Cobbler, which wasn't very good. And he rebounds nicely with this. Michael Keaton is well cast in it. Ruffalo does a very kind of off-ball performance. He's good in it. Stanley Tucci.
Great, yeah.
I mean, it's well acted down the line, written very well. The strange thing about it is it didn't really impact me as much as you think it would about children being molested by priests because of the fact it's so procedural that it never really had the emotional payoff that I was expecting from it. So it left me a little distant. So I would say this is a good movie, but not a great movie. And if it's up for anything, it might be for some acting categories because they make it look very effortlessly, all the actors do in this movie. And you know when they do that, it's just good acting.
I don't know. It's not big enough, I don't think, to get nominated or seriously nominated anyhow.
It's just nice, though, to see Keaton continuing on in fairly prestigious movies that are getting some attention. He was doing serious movies for a while before he got
nominated, but it's already fading.
I don't know, he's
unfortunately
good
for him. Yeah, he's great and everything. But it's his newfound stardom is already fading.
This movie though is going to do well in limited release. It did very well over the weekend and it's continued to expand. It is troubling subject matter, so I gotta say, go in there. Nothing really offensive in the movie. There's no scenes that are gonna, you know, make you shocked or anything. But I saw this in a packed theater, and with the per screen average over the weekend, this had the best in all of the movies in release. So I think this will go on to do pretty well. But I can't say it's a home run. It's a good triple though. All right. Finally, you saw the Final Girls. How was this?
I saw the Final Girls, a horror comedy. I really liked it. I thought it was very well done. Has a great bookend moment with the mom and the girl at the beginning and then towards the end. The problem with it is that it's not, it's kind of in the middle of being this horror comedy and being about this girl getting to say one last goodbye to her mom. So I don't know what you do with that. Yeah. So it's good. Yeah. But when you're already cheesy to kind of try to put, so you're cheesy horror, but to work that in a little bit sideways to make it kind of a cheesy, I miss my mom is a bit weird, you know, but it worked. I will say that it worked, and it's an interesting movie. It's not something that would have been made. But what I will say is that, you know, you look at something like the Scouts, what was it? Scouts Guide to the Apocalypse, where the fuck that failed horribly in theaters and everything. And I see something like this and I wonder, well, why doesn't this get the shot that movie did? You know, because this is clearly more interesting and better told than that. So, unfortunate in that regard, but, you know, interesting movie. I liked it.
All right. So you give it a mild recommendation.
I do. If you like horror movies, check it out. But like I say, be forewarned. It's weird. It's a weird movie.
It's got a mother-daughter angle in it. It's what I'm hearing. Look for the mother-daughter scene.
Yeah, no, not like that. That's actually a nice touch. I do like that a lot. And they pull the horror into that, both in the beginning, I guess, and then in the end as well. It's a nice scene for Malin Ackerman.
I always like Malin Ackerman.
She's good.
Mm-hmm. Ever since The Heartbreak Kid, she really won me over in that one.
Yeah, sure. She's good. Like her.
Streaming online pick of the week. Do you got a pick you want to throw out there?
I've been, it's not a movie, but I've been watching this really great Hulu original show.
Which one's that?
It's called Casual. And it's just a show about a guy who runs this. It's not really part of the show very much, but he runs this online dating website, and he's written the algorithm behind this thing. And so he's kind of trying to find love in a way. And his sister and her kids have come to live with him, and his sister is getting a divorce. So everyone's kind of looking for these casual relationships, but they're really kind of still. They're really searching for love in that way. And it's this is put out by Jason Reitman. So it really has that kind of Reitman feel to it, even though he's not the showrunner on this or the creator. But it does have that. If you like any of his type of movies, that's what this is like. And the lead guy in this, Tommy Dewey. I don't know. I've never seen him anything before, but I really like him.
I never heard of this show before, but I could see you probably watched it because of the Jason Reitman involvement, because I know you're a fan of Reitman's.
Yeah, I gave it a shot because I figured, what the hell? And this is one of those shows that I watch an episode of this and I just think, fuck, I wish there were 5 more episodes to watch. It's really good.
Is it brand new? Has it been out for a while?
No, yeah, just out right now. I think there's like 8 episodes or something, 7-8 episodes.
Okay, so yeah, fairly new. My streaming online pick of the week is going to be Fruitvale Station, because we have Creed coming out next week. And this is the first collaboration between Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan about Oscar Grant and the death of his on New Year's Eve in Oakland back in 2009. So if you're interested in Creed, watch their first collaboration before. This is a difficult movie to get through, a sad movie, but well done. And you can see that Coogler has talent behind the camera. As begrudgingly as I'd hate to say that, because I don't know about the screen thing yet, so we'll see. But the kid is talented. All right, let's move on for the trailer addicts.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay.
First up, Divergent, Allegiant, Part 1. Because you know they're busting that last film into two.
This is the fluffer. This is the part one.
Version. Oh yeah, yeah. They didn't say that in the title, but it is part one.
Oh my gosh!
So this is the proverbial franchise. This is the one for the studio, right?
This looked like Maze Runner thing, didn't it?
I don't know what the fuck's going on in this franchise. I can't get past 20 minutes of the first movie. So this is so really.
I can't remember if I've seen the second one or not. I'm pretty sure I did. I don't know how the fuck I get to this. What's going on?
I'm lost from the jump in this. I felt like somebody. I walked in on like. Somebody's joke.
Like
in the
they're leaving the city, and fucking, there's another people out there, and then shit's going down. This is like Maze Runner, right? Are all these young adult things all the same?
They're starting to feel like it. Not only that, her performance in the preview is so flat and uninterested that I just thought.
Oh, was there a performance that stood out more?
Well, I just thought she was just so uninterested. Everybody's in what she was doing.
Everyone looks just horrible in this.
I mean, talk about going through the motions here. It really
I'm gonna agree with you. Yeah, it's bad. Like, it just seems like people are just there. Yeah, she doesn't seem interested at all.
This looks like a contract stipulation.
She's like, I got one more.
Your bid for Jennifer Lawrence supremacy has not gone well, sweetheart. Let's move on. I don't want to talk about that one any longer. Let's talk about IP Man 3 or Ip Man 3, if you've seen the movies, because I like to call him IP Man, like he's a technical wizard, but it's really Ip Man.
No, he pees.
Yeah, he see you too. I pee you. And this is the third film. And really is only going to be notable for the presence of Mike Tyson, who is going to be in this very little from what the trailer shows. Darren Maybe Chevalier, who died of a drug overdose.
He pees him.
Yeah, he. I beat you too.
I pee you.
And he was in the last one. This looks like more of the same from your boy Donnie Yen, who's really getting too old for this kind of shit.
Yeah, he looks really old. He looks just like he just kind of walks around. It's like, I'm done.
These movies, the first one at least was good. The second one less so, and now we get to the third one. It's becoming a little much. It's like kind of like the Ong Bak series.
But this will do well overseas, so.
Yeah, and he's have a minor cult following here in the U.S. still, but he's no Jackie Chan, okay? He's no Jackie Chan.
He's doing just fine. He just released that new Police Story movie. It's on Netflix. Who wants to watch that? Looks really good.
I didn't even realize that. Okay, check that out. Oh, there's Jackie. Okay. Gotcha,
he's
Jackie.
There. He's working.
He is. He's still in the loop. Okay, it's good. I mean, there was a time when, like, every 3 months you had some fucking wacky Jackie Chan adventure coming at you in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. And those were the good ones.
Jackie Chan jumping off a fucking helicopter. Jackie Chan kicking somebody in the face of the ladder. Jackie Chan's like, Jesus Christ, Jackie.
Exactly.
He's a cook, but he also can jump from building to building.
He was definitely a lot like Steven Seagal.
He was half the man.
He did something.
Steven Seagal was.
Well, Steven Seagal is kind of a giant.
Oh, man.
And Jackie Chan is Asian, so.
You know what? Well, some of my favorite things to do with Steven Seagal, I got to be honest with you. Now that I got this 4K
TV. You have
TV,
favorite things to do with Steven Seagal?
Well, with his movies, at least.
What do you do with him?
I get some peanut butter and I call over the dog. No, this is what I do.
Steven!
I have a 4K TV now. And I have some of these really shitty Steven Seagal movies on HD.
You know, that's the only way you can get Seagal entirely in the frame as if you were watching it on a 4K TV.
4K. No, I'm telling you though.
It requires the extra resolution.
Yeah. Exit Wounds on Blu-ray, which looks stunning, by the way.
I'm
you
sure.
You can clearly see his spray-in fucking hairline. That he's got like the spray-on black shit that he's like coloring in to make it look like he has a fuller hairline, which you really couldn't notice in the movies and on DVD. But let me tell you what, 4K is not kind to this man. He
really
does not want the HD treatment. I'm telling you, anybody that's got that shit, and if you're watching a bad Seagal movie from
what's Tom Arnold look like? Is that scary too?
Comparatively, not bad, honestly. Anthony Anderson's handsome in comparison, so Jesus. I'm telling you, I like that movie. Exit Wounds still holds up, though, as a movie.
Okay. Exit Wounds is one of the bad ones, man.
You ever heard Tom Arnold tell a story from Exit Wounds? And we're going off on a tangent here. About Seagal walking out the wrong door.
Tom Arnold tells the best stories.
Tom Arnold is a great storyteller. Google Tom Arnold, Steven Seagal story if you get a chance. There's great stories about Seagal out there by anybody that's ever worked with them, too. Rob Schneider's got a bunch. Keenan Ivory Wayne's got a few. There's good ones out there.
Yeah, I like the Glimmer Man, too.
And so do I. Unfortunately, so do I.
Yeah, but that's old. You know, these are old.
All right, 999. This is the new police cops and robbers type movie coming out. This looked like something that a David Ayer heaven. Oh, this is directed by John Hillcoat, the guy who did Lawless a while back and things like that. But this looks pretty damn good to me.
I'm surprised. This kind of came out of nowhere for me, and I was thinking this is going to be. It's called 999. I was looking at the cast a little bit. I thought this will be some piece of shit thrown together thing. This actually looks nice. Some nice action. Everyone looks like they're putting their full weight into it.
Yeah, well said.
I mean, Woody Harrelson looks great in this. It looks from every angle. I'm like, ooh, this looks like an interesting movie.
Yeah, the cops. It looks like a Heat in a version. You know what I mean? Like kind of a new age version of Heat mixed with.
Yeah, like having the cop trying to figure out what's going on while you also have the bad guys. / good guys, maybe, right? Trying to pull off this heist and stuff. That's cool. I don't know. That works.
And the idea of the 999 being the police code for an officer down, and they're going to kill a cop to get all the cops.
It's very 90s.
Yeah, very nice. So, I mean, that's why I'm going to be a Heat, very much so, you know, like a smaller version of that. So I thought this is the strongest trailer on today's show by far. All right, we have My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. For those of you that have been waiting 13 years now for the sequel, to know what Nina Valderos is doing.
Never made it through the first one.
All I know is I needed more Windex. I wanted to drink it after I watched the first one to kill myself. I could not stand the first one. It was a surprise hit. Yeah. One of the biggest grossing independent films of all time. Really much loved, to be fair, although her career has gone nowhere since then. She's written a couple bad movies and starred in them. So now she's going back to the well 13 years later with a return to form. I guess I'm not the target audience. I found maybe one or two smiles with the old lady saying a couple lines, but those are cheap shots in really what looks like a useless entry.
Felt a bit Tyler Perry-ish. And
very Tyler Perry-ish.
I was totally lost on it after too many people. This movie could have gone every which possible fucking way, and then finally it chose a very weird wedding narrative to go down where the parents... wedding is basically no good and they have to get remarried. I thought the daughter was going to get married at one point. I was like, well, who's going to get married in this?
Is that what you pulled out as? I thought it was the daughter's wedding. I didn't know that the parents were getting remarried.
Yeah, wasn't that the whole thing? They found they pulled out the wedding certificate. They're like, the guy never signed it. We're not married. So I don't know. Was it a double wedding? I mean, the daughter was in white at the end of the movie. I'm a little confused.
It might have been a prom, for Christ's sake.
I have no idea. That's right. Yeah.
I thought this trailer was confused from the jump. Like you said, there were so many strands going on here that it felt like a Marvel universe. There were so many characters popping up into this thing.
Did we time travel here? Where's this? Who's the Terminator in this one?
And talk about too little too late is the definition right here. Last trailer on today's show is The Lady in the Car with Glasses and a Gun, a Julianne Moore starring film. This is actually a French film, to be fair. I didn't realize that when I... had you watched this trailer?
Yeah, I know. I was watching it and I thought, there's no dialogue. This is a shitty trailer. And then the last piece of dialogue is in French. And I was like, oh, that's why there's no dialogue.
This looks very David Lynch, though. I'll say that. I mean, this looks different.
I don't know. This just looks like boring. Honestly, these types of movies, this looks like it's trying too hard. You don't have to try this hard. You know, I mean, what's going to happen in this? It's not going to be anything worth this kind of a buildup.
Well, this is guaranteed. To me, it looks like your abused woman that finally kills somebody, her lover, and then has to go on the run because no one believes that she was abused in the first place. It's kind of what
no,
I was getting.
No, that's not what this is.
No? What did you get? Did you read the synopsis? I didn't read the synopsis. I was trying to go into a cold.
Jesus. The synopsis is this girl goes on a joyride in her boss's car, and in the trunk is a dead body.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up at all.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe it's because it was in French. I'm not sure.
No, the trailer's really bad. The trailer is hard to understand. It's mostly it's a lot like the Angelina Jolie Pitt movie that's coming out.
Yeah, that by the sea did remind me of that as well. That very European kind of.
Yeah, it's very pitty. Very, it's in the pits.
It is. I like some pits though.
Well, that's some Brad Pitts.
And that's gonna wrap our show up tonight on episode 289. We want to thank you guys for continuing to join.
Sweaty Seagal pits.
I'm telling you, watch a Seagal movie on HD. It is a scary and watch that hairline move throughout it. It's like a racehorse.
Oh my god!
It advances.
The ponytail
retracts. It advances.
You gotta watch the ones with a ponytail.
Those are the good ones.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Once the ponytail goes, you're fucked. That's when his career goes downhill. We didn't know that.
No. The ponytail Seagal. Goes and the tits come in.
My last Seagal story for the night. You ever hear the Seagal story about the writer, the very prominent screenwriter he had, up to his estate to discuss script ideas and whatnot? You hear about this?
I don't know. It sounds familiar, but...
So this writer that he's never come out and said who it was, but he's an Academy Award-winning writer, and Seagal wanted to talk about projects with him. And he made the writer wait for over 2 hours before he emerged from his office. And the writer said that Seagal was in tears and holding a script. And the writer said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I've just read the best script I've ever read." And the writer said, "Well, that's fantastic. Who's it by?" And he said, "Me."
That is the best.
I mean, that just goes to show you why we don't have to be Seagal around anymore. I mean, that is talking about it. Fucking arrogance.
When I used to work at the video store, we had a crazy lady that would come in, and she would do yoga, and she would see Steven Seagal, and he would come to her in spirit form, and they would hang out and do things.
I think that she came in the store to do yoga. Time. I thought she was like in between those fucking aisles.
She may have been, man. She was a nut. But that was the greatest thing I thought I've ever heard in my life. I was like, that's awesome.
She definitely owned the Songs from a Crystal Cave CD.
She loved that, man. I mean, if he ever showed up, he's in trouble.
Yeah, he's definitely he can still slay some ass. I'll tell you that. His demographics changed, but he can still do it.
He's got to be careful because that ass is looking to slay him.
She's doing yoga trying to keep it up for him. Well, guys, that's our show for tonight. We want to thank you guys for joining us. As always, you can hear past podcasts on Movie Mavericks, iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe, or wherever else you may be getting podcasts from. Go to MovieMavericks.com for the latest movie news, reviews, all that kind of stuff, and Box Office Ace, get in the game. Don't forget to check back with us next week. We'll have a new show for you. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com/warp9. Engage!